Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Vandana Shiva is an author, environmental activist, and the charismatic founder of Navdanya, a movement of 500,000 seed keepers and organic farmers in India. She gives rousing speeches about corporate agribusiness destroying traditional farms, but she often also makes additional frightening claims that GMOs cause farmer suicides, malnutrition, and toxic contamination. Monsanto and its scientists have made billions, she says, while millions of people have suffered.
40% of greenhouse gases are coming from an industrial agriculture and globalized agriculture. 100% of the emissions could be absorbed into the soil by doing ecological agriculture, which is the future, not just because it rejuvenates the soil. It's a climate solution. And good soils with ecological systems, robust, with the billions of microorganisms working with us, can produce 2 times more food, especially if we intensify biodiversity. That's my work in India through Navdanya. We are doubling food production per acre. We are doubling nutrition production, which is the most significant issue. So it's a solution to hunger and poverty and malnutrition. But more importantly, when farmers have seed sovereignty, when farmers do organic farming and are not blowing up money on patented seed, royalties, expenditure on pesticides and fertilizers, they actually can increase incomes tenfold. Our members, who are small farmers, have done that.
Monsanto says that it is, in fact, working on the front lines of increasing food security in the world by doubling food production using its technological techniques. What do you say to that?
Well, sadly, it does very well in advertisement, but not on the ground. The technology of genetic engineering, which is what made Monsanto a seed giant, before that it was just a chemical giant that had brought us dioxin, that had brought us the toxics. That genetic engineering technology is not a breeding technology. It takes existing plants that have been bred by farmers through selection or crossbreeding or hybrids, and then it introduces, through shooting with a gene gun, a gene that doesn't belong to that plant. And so far, the majority of applications have been two traits. One is called Bt toxin, where Bt is Bacillus thuringiensis, pulling a gene out of a soil organism to now produce a pesticide inside the plant. The approval for Bt crops in the United States is for pesticides. It's not for food crops. And the second family is herbicide-tolerant crops, where Roundup can be sprayed on plants, and the plant survives, but everything else dies. Now, not only have these not increased yields, they actually are leading to decline in yields where superpests and superweeds are now overtaking agriculture.
What do you make of the success on cotton production in India that is a result directly of genetically engineered seeds?
Unfortunately, that too is not true. The Cotton Research Institute of India, which is the premier institute, has done studies and has
shown. But the World Trade Administration says that India is one of the biggest producers of cotton, and that was never the case even 10 years ago.
No, that's not true. India was the biggest producer of cotton. Through history, we domesticated cotton. We got freedom with Gandhi spinning cotton. We lost cotton during the colonialism when cotton, based on slavery, shifted to the U.S. Then during the American Civil War, cotton production moved back to India. During the 10 years pre-GMOs was 10 years where the U.S. was subsidizing cotton up to $4 billion a year. This was the subject of the collapse of the Cancun meetings of the World Trade Organizations because the Africans said, you're killing us with the subsidy. These subsidies became issues of disputes in the WTO. Brazil won the case against the U.S. And as long as the subsidies were in place, a lot of dumping was taking place, which meant countries like India couldn't export. When it's the subsidy factor and the trade factor that was changed, India could start exporting again.
So
we were exporting
success,
before. The success is actually the removal of the subsidy distortion.
It's nothing to do with the GMOs.
Nothing to do with the GMOs at all. And where we have increased cotton production is because we've increased acreage. And it's the same story with the Green Revolution. India produced more rice and wheat, but we increase acreage of rice and wheat. And I've had debates with the Borloo foundations that we've shown that the land and the irrigation explain the increase in production. The idea of miracle seeds and chemicals, and now miracle GMOs, is covering up the real roots of where production increases.
Let's talk about golden rice. You say that golden rice is actually causing deaths, whereas people claim that golden rice would, in fact, supply vitamin A to individuals who had actually needed and reduce blindness.
I have never said golden rice is causing deaths for two reasons. It doesn't exist, so how can it do anything? It's just a promise for the future. And second, we've never said that the risks of genetic engineering is about killing people. It's about causing harm. And causing harm is very different. Golden rice, my critique of golden rice is twofold. First, that it promotes the monocultures that are at the heart of the malnutrition problem, because if we grow diversity, you don't have deficiencies in minerals, trace elements, and micronutrients. Second, if you grow biodiversity and you compare the vitamin A production of the amaranth, the coriander that we use daily in our food, the curry leaves, they have much richer production of vitamin A. So just give every woman a kitchen garden, and you've solved the vitamin A problem.
But that doesn't mean that golden rice wouldn't have some benefit.
No, it doesn't have benefit. If it's 100%, 300% less productive in vitamin A, and your better alternatives are available, then you don't really need golden rice, particularly when the spread of golden rice within a chemical agriculture model is going to destroy the sources of vitamin A that people could have for free.
So golden rice would actually destroy agricultural production if it was allowed to be used.
Exactly. But I would add, the next miracle they're trying to come up with is a so-called GMO banana, promising to provide iron to women who have iron deficiency anemia in India and produce vitamin A for the Ugandans. And they've already rushed trials in the United States with 12 young students. 12 students eating three bananas is going to be a scientific study to impose genetically modified bananas. For India, on iron, we've shown that 7,000% more iron we can have through biodiversity. We've also found that the GMO banana is biopirated, which means the yellowness has been taken through theft from Micronesia. This, to me, is one of the biggest outrages of the false promise of genetic engineering, that at the end of the day, it's based on stealing the biological heritage of the third world, their knowledge, and then selling it as an invention. If Monsanto takes soya bean, which is an East Asian crop, puts one toxic gene into it and says, I've invented the seed, that is not creation. It is not invention. BT is a toxic gene.
Toxic to pests?
No. Now, in the soil organism, the original gene is only toxic to the caterpillar family of pests. It's not toxic to other species, not toxic to human animals. But in the plant, it is now already made toxic. And that's the difference. And there's enough science to show that it is not substantially equivalent.
But doesn't that result in the reduced use of chemical pesticides?
Sadly.
It has in India.
No, it's not true, because after the BT cotton, where a pesticide-producing gene has been added to the plant, we have more pests in cotton than ever before. Pests that were never cotton pests, the aphids, the jacids, the mealybugs, the army bugs.
But the question is, there's less pesticide use in cotton production in India as a result of the BT cotton.
If you have 300% more pests, you're going to have more pesticide use. And the one pest which it was supposed to control, which is called the bollworm, which came to India through the hybrid cotton from America, the pink bollworm has become resistant. So now Monsanto has Bollgard 2, the second generation of two toxic genes. The resistance has made the pest it was targeting evolve resistance. And meantime, insects that were never pests have become pests for which more pesticide is being sprayed.
I understand what you're saying. You may be right that the pests are increasing and that eventually it'll change. But right now, pesticide use is actually down.
I don't think national data is what one looks at. You look at the particular fields where the BT cotton was grown. You talk to the farmers. Are they using less or more pesticide?
They're saying they use less.
No, they're using more. Our studies show they're using more.
All right, well, that's sort of the hazy sort of stats.
Yes.
Who says?
Yes.
And that's part of what is frustrating about this debate. Why is Monsanto directly responsible and answerable for the suicides of Indian farmers?
You know, I have a very plain logic to this. If you say you own something, then you own the impacts of that something. If you're selling a seed where you're collecting royalty in the name of technology fees and technology trade,
right,
because India doesn't allow patenting, and you're collecting that, and that is shooting up the price.
So the price pushes the farmers into insolvency.
Debt.
The insolvency causes the suicide.
Exactly.
Why do the stats show that farmers are no more likely to commit suicide in India these days than other professions?
No, that's not true. And no, again, we
actually,
need
to, that is.
No, true. No. What you need to look at is the pockets. You know, if you're talking, I'm trained as a physicist. If you're looking at a phenomena and you're looking at the processes, you look at where that process is taking place. If most of the suicides are in the cotton areas, then you look at the processes in the cotton belt. You don't shoot up to national averages. So I think we just need to be far more specific. I mean, you take WTO data on exports and you don't talk about subsidies. You talk national averages, you don't talk about what's happening to the farmers in Maharashtra. I think good science is about specificity.
What public health issue is directly relatable to GMO crops?
That's what we are demanding be studied.
But there, you can say there is no public health fatality, malady.
We've never said it'll be
right.
About fatality.
What is the claim of public health risk from GMOs that you can point to?
You have a system in this country where you say substantial equivalence, pretend a genetically modified food is the same as a non-genetically modified food. And then it comes to ownership. You say, no. We've made it for the first time. It's an invention. That's ontological schizophrenia. You can't have the same thing as novel when it comes to ownership and natural
right.
when it comes to shedding responsibility.
And that's the sovereignty issue. That's not the public health issue. Can I just ask
no,
you?
No, but I think there's a public health issue in the fact that American public is finally saying, we want to know what we eat. We need labeling laws. A simple democratic law of saying, I know what's in my food. Why is millions and millions of dollars being poured to kill labeling initiatives or sue states like Vermont? Why has democracy to be sacrificed?
Monsanto says that the laws that exist now are perfectly adequate to determine which are GMO and which are GMO-free foods in the United States. What do you say to that?
Well, I trust the American public to know better about what's in the interest of the American public than Monsanto's judgment. After all, democracy means Monsanto doesn't decide, the people do.
Why can you double food production faster than companies like Monsanto using technological means to increase food production?
For one, they use technological means without looking at the overall context of what happens to the soil, what happens to the biodiversity, what happens to the pollinators. We can double food production because we work with biodiversity, we work with the soil, we work with the pollinators. There are six times more pollinators on the Navdhania farm than there are in the forest next door.
But you wouldn't deny that the increase in agricultural production over the last 20 years has something to do with the technology.
For me, technology is a tool. And you look at what did the tool do. In the case of agriculture, a tool is a very small component. The soil fertility decides how much you'll get. Whether you have irrigation or not, that decides how much output you'll have. The potential of the seed decides. The biodiversity intensification decides. The reason our systems produce more is we intensify biodiversity. And the more biodiversity there is, the more nutrition per acre there is. The industrial system, which is called the use of technology, actually destroys biodiversity, has destroyed the fertility of soils. That intensive agriculture that's producing less food per acre, it's producing more commodities per acre. But the commodities are going to drive cars as biofuel. They're going to torture animals as animal feed. That's not a food system. The first issue about industrial agriculture, it is destroying the planet. The second issue is it's giving us nutritionally empty commodities with no micronutrients, no trace elements. And that's why we have so many new diseases, which also need to be looked at much more. The impact of toxics need to be looked at much more. The third aspect is the fact that industrial agriculture, which uses 10 times more input than it produces as food, and also uses 10 times more finances than it can earn for the farmer. It's a negative economy. Farmers trapped in this negative economy is the reason family farms has disappeared. It's the reason our small peasants are being pushed off the land. When there are systems of farming that can give meaningful, viable livelihoods that protect the livelihoods of farmers.
Very persuasive, but I fear that you're conflating the debate over industrial agriculture, which is a legitimate debate, with the debate over GMOs, which is a fundamentally different discussion.
It's not a different discussion, and I think it is time to not let it be treated as independent of the industrial agriculture system. GMOs are part of an industrial agriculture system. GMOs don't exist in and of themselves.
No, I understand that, but mass-scale agriculture is different from genetically modified corn.
No, genetically modified corn requires a conversion to industrial agriculture, which is why we will solve these problems of fruitless debate when we realize the gene doesn't exist independent of the plant and a GMO doesn't exist independent of an agriculture system.